All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
College recruiting, high school prospects, and more. This is Recruiting with Oregon Live's Andrew Nemec. Brought to you by Power Rents, your local family-owned independent equipment rental company in Portland, Salem, and Vancouver. Online at powerrents.com.
Cooey!
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan, Odyssey app, and 1080thefan.com.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Oregon, possibly entering new territory, the Lone Star State. Probably not going to turn it green and yellow, but they're making a move. And a major shakeup, although an under-the-radar major shakeup for the Oregon basketball program. We'll also get into the 24/7 Sports updated 2023 rankings. The first, I believe, deep dive in the class of 2023 nationally. Guess what, folks? There's another Manning. Arch Manning. The son of Cooper, the nephew of Eli and Peyton, and yes, the grandson of Archie. He's the number one quarterback in the entire country. So we will dive into the initial look at the class of 2023. But first, the biggest news on the recruiting trail of late comes from, well, as it often does, the Oregon Ducks. They added a three-star wide receiver, Steven Johnson, here just yesterday. Three-star prospect, had an offer from USC, had an offer from Utah, had an offer from Ole Miss. And I'm going to level with you. I mean, I'm big on being honest with you. When I think a prospect's going to be great, I'm all over it. When I think a prospect's going to be so-so, sometimes I just kind of give you the facts. I don't necessarily see Steven Johnson as being earth-shattering. I think the three-star ranking is pretty fair. Sometimes there are guys that are three-star prospects, and I go, man, underrated. There's no way this is a three-star guy. Dylan Mitchell, when he committed to Oregon out of Tennessee, I went, there's no way that's a three-star prospect. I'm sorry, he's better than that. And he was. When Justin Herbert committed and was unrated, I said, I think he's going to play in the NFL. I think he's way better than being not rated. I don't necessarily see Steven Johnson as an earth-shattering talent, but I still think he's very valuable. And the reason I think he's very valuable is that Oregon is entering new territory with this commitment. Marcus Arroyo came in as the offensive coordinator a few years ago, and his claim to fame, his big thing, the guy he was supposed to be, was the man who could open up Texas. Oregon already can blanket the West Coast. They already have inroads in California. They do a nice job in the home state. They're up in Washington competing for talent. They get players out of Nevada. You look at this last recruiting class. They flex their muscles in the West region. Number one prospect out of Utah, number one prospect out of Colorado, number one prospect out of Oregon, in the mix for JTU Tuimoloau, the number one prospect in Washington. Everybody knows about the success they've had in California. And they landed Ty Thompson and Bram Walden, the top two prospects out of Arizona. They're killing it in the West region. They're killing it in the Pac-12 footprint. So what's the next frontier? Well, if you're Oregon, wouldn't it be great if you could get Texas involved in your recruitment? They're one of the three big states, one of the three golden states in recruiting. California, Texas, Florida. If you have a footprint in two of those three states, you're going to be a national program and you're going to compete for national championships. Oregon in 2023, trying very hard to make a move in the state of Texas. That's what this commitment tells me. And I think there's reason to be very excited about the potential of opening up the state of Texas. You get Steven Johnson. They've already gotten four-star safety Landon Hullaby, another player I really like. I like Landon Hullaby. I think he's properly rated as a four-star, mid-four-star safety. Good player. Good prospect. But potentially, and we already have seen this, potentially they open the door for some of the big names in Texas. Who's Steven Johnson close to? Well, he's close to Kelvin Banks. Kelvin Banks is the number two offensive tackle in the country, an Under Armour All-American. Right after Johnson committed, Banks was on Twitter going, hey, link up in college? Banks has set an official visit to Oregon in August, the number two offensive tackle in the nation, the five-star offensive lineman. You start opening up Texas and taking the big boys out of Texas, and you are opening up and claiming some pull out of two of the most three talent-rich states in America. That's a big development. 2023 is going to be a year where Oregon is going to swing really big on really big prospects. And I think at the end of the day, you know, we looked at this class, or excuse me, the 2022 class. We looked at the class of 2021, and I told you a year out, this is going to be Oregon's best class ever. May not get a five-star, maybe will, but they're going to get like 24 stars because they're in it for 80 of them. 2022 to me, this class so far looks like a class of big swings. I think Oregon might have seven or eight prospects. You go, eh, in a normal year, they're talented. They're not unbelievable. They're not headline talent, but they're talented and they could develop six or seven of those guys. And then I think they're going to take six or seven big swings and try this year to take some big swings and end up with four or five five-star prospects. That's what the roadmap looks to me right now. Some really, really high end, and then some middle of the road guys. Maybe some guys that would be in the back third of the 2021 recruiting class. A good group, talented. Nobody's complaining about Brandon Buckner, who was the lowest rated kid in 2021. How come? Because he was a Max Preps first team All-American. If that's the, air quotes here, worst recruit you get, you're doing a pretty good job. So I think Oregon is willing to take a couple guys that you like, you're not in love with, they're not All-Americans, they're not five-star prospects, early because you like them, you think they're developmental, but also it potentially opens up inroads in Texas. And why is Texas on the table? Well, to be completely candid, Texas done started it. Texas hired Steve Sarkisian as their head coach, and Sark, as everybody knows, has inroads to California. And what does he do early on? They make a point on social media and elsewhere of saying, we're going to recruit California hard. California is now Texas territory. And sure enough, they got Malik Murphy, one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the nation, already committed to their class. So if Texas is going to push into California and take away some of your talent, and let's just face it, even if Texas doesn't do a remarkable job and become a power player in California, if they offer some kids in California, they're going to get some of them. Doesn't mean they're going to get all of them. Doesn't mean they're going to control the state, but they're going to be another contender in California for talent. And regularly, Sark's going to go there more frequently than the last coach. So how do you counteract that? Well, you make darn sure you do a good job in California and keep fighting like heck there. But also, if you start recruiting Texas and Sark has to circle the wagons to make sure and spend the resources on making sure he can keep those guys home, it potentially double whammy. You pull guys from Texas, you also make it that much harder for him to spend all his resources in California. So I think there's some chess going on with this Oregon Duck 2022 recruiting class where you can see, if you look at the tea leaves, what Oregon's doing. Trying to open up Texas, trying to make sure Sark doesn't get a huge foothold in California, and also making sure he has to spend some of his resources in Texas. It's interesting. I mean, if we're just in March and looking at April now, April 1st, and we're looking at, like, what are some of the early developments in this recruiting class? Between Landon Hullaby and Stephen Johnson, it looks like Oregon's going to push to take talent out of Texas. And that's something they haven't done before. And it's something we know Mario Cristobal wanted to do. How come? He brought in Arroyo. There probably isn't a listener, at least there's not a smart listener, no offense, who thinks Arroyo was a good offensive coordinator. Guess what? He wasn't. He was terrible. Absolutely terrible. I don't think that was news at 11 for Cristobal. I think he probably thought he was better than he was, but I think the big thing with Arroyo is Arroyo's supposed to bring in Texas. And when Arroyo was first hired, Oregon had their Saturday Night Live camp in the summer, and a bunch of good Texas kids came, including five-star wide receiver RJ Henderson. And he committed to Oregon. Five-star wide receiver. The problem was Arroyo didn't have the pull he thought he did. And RJ Henderson ended up flipping. They got a couple other Texas commitments. Those guys decommitted. And Arroyo's pull in Texas never really materialized. That was his big selling point as a recruiter. He never really did it. He was a pretty solid recruiter. He helped with California. He helped in general. He was an above average recruiter. But what was supposed to make him elite was that he could open up Texas. Never could. To me, it looks like Cristobal's going all in 2022 and saying, California, Texas, we're going to open you up. And I think that's a really, really fascinating development. Mike, I think that potentially is a roadmap where you start saying, if Oregon can really get their foothold in Texas, I think we're seeing something that maybe only USC in the Pete Carroll era was ever able to do. We'll see if they can pull it off.
My question is based on the Sark stuff. Do you truly believe that Sark will be able to long-term get a foothold in recruiting California kids to Texas?
Yes.
And yes. It's just because of his connections? Because California kids, from what my assumptions are, based on what we've talked about in the past, they don't really go to Texas. That's not a school that they've ever really considered.
But you have to look at the landscape as it currently sits. USC doesn't have the hold they had. And that's what really opened the door for Oregon in the state of California 3 years ago. USC was just bad at recruiting. Remember, they had an early signing period where they finished 12th in the Pac-12. That really opened up things for Oregon, for Arizona State, potentially, for Washington, potentially. Now, a lot of those other programs really failed to capitalize on that opportunity. Oregon killed it. And you could say, well, how did it really work out? Well, it gave him Javon Holland and Thomas Graham Jr. Those were a couple of the big names that came out of there. That worked out pretty well. Those guys are headed to the NFL. So there was this opening, and Oregon used it to get their foothold in. And I still think UCLA's not doing a great job of recruiting with Chip Kelly. Stanford, at times, was a power, especially for offensive linemen, tight ends, and quarterbacks. And they're always going to be able to offer that academic thing that not everybody else can. But Stanford's not recruiting like they used to. Stanford used to be second in the Pac-12, third in the Pac-12. They're not that team anymore. They're not pulling in All-Americans left and right along the offensive line. Cal is doing better, but Cal's not a juggernaut recruiter. So who else in the state of California can really bring them in? So there's an opening there. I think Oregon's doing a good job. I think USC is doing better. But look at Texas's class already. They've offered a ton of kids. They already landed Malik Murphy. He's the number 4 pro-style quarterback in the entire country. And then Sark, staying true to home, has 6 other commitments. They're all from Texas. But he is offering California kids. And I think any time one of those big states is experiencing, whether it's Florida, Ohio, Texas, California, anytime the in-state programs are letting it slip and letting it slide, when there's lots of 4- and 5-star talent, you're going to see programs close to them really push to get in. Because once you are in, and it comes down to like being in with one of the top 7-on-7 programs, you get 3 or 4 of their kids in a year, suddenly you're there every year because their little brother or their, you know, young teammate wants to join them. And that's happened for Oregon. Well, and I think it could happen for Texas if they can get their foot into California. It's kind of an arms race.
I do have a second question, though, is that Texas is no longer the same that they were back with Mac Brown. Like, Texas has had some down years. They're no longer some sort of dominant nationwide team.
There's work to do, no doubt.
So that's why I'm asking, like, okay, cool, Sark, you've got old connections, but Texas isn't Texas anymore. They can get back there, and if they're winning, you know, 11, 12 games a year again, then sure, they could poach kids from anywhere because they're Texas. But
that has to be Sark's vision, right? Well, like, what does he sell that you hire Sark over some of the other guys? I've had success other places. I'm ready to be a head coach again, and oh yeah, I can untap California talent. We already are Texas, so we still have the tradition at home. We've still gotten great players from home. I'll clean up Texas, and I'll get inroads in California and we'll be dominant. And you can at least sell it. I mean, and I, you're right. Are they going to be able to pull it off? I don't know.
It just seems like big talk and it's cool, right? You used to coach at USC and you got these inroads, but you know.
Well, they just landed an All-American quarterback out of California. So
getting one is certainly a good start.
It's a good start.
It's just big talk.
And it's big talk to say Oregon's going to go into Texas and pull out Texas talent. But I think I admire the effort. And I think the approach makes sense. If you can go all in on a new state that's an elite producer of talent and you feel like you've got a real shot because Texas ain't the power program it normally is, maybe Texas is a little more open than it has been in the past few years. And if Sark sees that with USC not recruiting at the level they normally do, UCLA not recruiting at the level they normally do, Stanford not recruiting at the level they normally do, he sees an opening. Why not be ambitious? Why not try to untap one of the top three producers of talent in the country? I think it makes sense, and I think it's something that Sark's trying to do, and it looks like it's something Sark with California, it looks like something Oregon is trying to do with Texas in this recruiting cycle, and it's something to watch. And I think where you really define success is not with a guy as talented as he is. It's not with a guy like Steven Johnson or Landon Hullaby, who are talented kids. They're talented kids. But where you really start to see a difference maker is if Oregon really is able to land Kelvin Banks, the Under Armour All-American who's visiting in August. If you start to take those guys out of Texas, you're really making headway. There's a big development in Oregon basketball, and it's kind of flown under the radar. And I think it might alter things pretty dramatically here in the next couple years. We will talk about it next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 10 of the Fan.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan, Odyssey app, and 1080thefan.com.
Breaking news during the break. Caden Hauser, arguably, certainly one of Oregon State's top targets, quarterback out of California, has announced his commitment. He is committing to Boise State over Oregon State. And when you're looking for signs of progress, certainly you want to beat out Boise State for prospects. And this stings a little bit. Caden Hauser has been a target for Oregon State for a long time and certainly has looked the part of a big-time quarterback prospect. He picked up an offer, and we talked about it on the show. He picked up an offer from Washington about a month ago, and you went, man, that's going to make it tougher, but we'll see. I didn't expect Boise State to be the offer that tipped the scales. Caden Hauser out of St. John Bosco, a powerhouse program in the country, but certainly a powerhouse program in California, also potentially could have untapped some talent from a major pipeline state. And I got to be honest, this one stings a little bit. There's still time to find another quarterback. I'm sure they're going to, if they can look across the whole country and they've got 9 months to do it, find a guy that's close to the same. But you don't want to potentially identify a guy as a guy you like. They've offered him. They like him. You don't want to, I mean, they've recruited him this whole time. I assume they like him. You don't want to potentially lose those kind of guys to the Mountain West Conference, even if it is a program like Boise State.
Yeah, it's one of those things where a couple of years ago, it may have felt a little bit different if Boise State was the pick over Oregon State. But we've talked about how the Beavs have been building some momentum and they've been doing better recruiting and they've been smarter in their recruiting strategies than they were under Gary Anderson. But you're right, to see this is a really big bummer. And also, this reminds me a little bit, wasn't Brock Purdy a target of Oregon State a couple of years ago?
Yes, Brock Purdy was a target of Oregon State.
And then he got an extra star and all of a sudden other teams came in. Was that how that went?
He updated his film.
Okay.
Still a 3-star. Alabama was looking for a filler quarterback because they already had a loaded room and they wanted a guy who would be willing to kind of hold a clipboard and not transfer. So they normally go after the 5-star guy. They wanted a third string guy that would never leave. So they offered Purdy hoping he'd be that guy. So Alabama offered and somebody else major offered, like Georgia or something like that. That's not right. It's somebody like that. And Oregon State was supposed to host a visit and just put their hands up. Like, nah, we're not going to get him. Mm-hmm. Iowa State offered and went, we think Alabama and whoever that other school was that was major want you as a clipboard holder. We think you're our program altering quarterback. So we're going to recruit the heck out of you. He ended up at Iowa State and was a freshman All-American.
Yeah, that's not kind of what this reminds me of a little bit. Cause I remember I was doing your show when that happened, when you first started this show. And then I went off the show for a year or two. And I remember being like, oh, this guy at Iowa State is getting a lot of accolades and people are saying he's going to be really good. I saw his name and I went, wasn't that the guy that the Beavs had under, you know, that they had offered early and he liked Oregon State and wanted to go there and he went to Iowa State and, you know, maybe not a comparable school, but, you know, it's another kind of middling school in a major conference. This kind of is kind of what it reminds me of, right? It's a guy that is good, starts getting a little bit more attention from a school like Washington, and then goes to a school that is seems to be, I don't know, in my mind, equal to slightly below level of Oregon State, and watch now he's going to turn into the next Brock Purdy. Right?
Well, and to continue on that Purdy line, his brother, and it's either Chuba or Chuba, it's C-H-U-B-B-A. His younger brother ended up being in this last recruiting cycle, two recruiting cycles ago, the number 7 dual threat quarterback in the country and went to Florida State. So you could have potentially opened up the Purdy pipeline and right. had two quarterbacks. It was a miscue, and it was the last staff. I don't think this is quite that, but I get what you're saying, where it's like,
it just has the same feel.
You don't want to lose momentum with a kid you like. If you lose a recruit to USC, if you lose a kid to Washington, if you lose a kid to Oregon, you may hate to hear that. An Oregon State fan may hate to hear that. Listen, they're more successful programs than you are right now. They are. And their recruiting profile right now is better than yours. Washington just signed the number 1 quarterback in the nation. USC is back to getting a top 3 recruiting class in the Pac-12 every year. Oregon has had the number 1 recruiting class in the Pac-12 for 3 straight years. They're recruiting at a higher level than you are right now. So that when they come over the top of you, you might lose those battles. And you can kind of justify that and understand that. I think as long as Jonathan Smith loses the key battles he wants to win, and potentially, I'm guessing this is, considering they offered him and stayed with him and recruited him throughout. He confirmed that to me, that Oregon State was still recruiting him throughout his process. When you lose that kind of guy to the Mountain West, that is a sign that maybe you're not making the recruiting progress you need to make. And there's no doubt that they've made progress on the field. Nobody questions that. They did great on the field this past year. They competed in their games. They easily could have had a winning record if not for a weird spot of the ball against Washington. They had another game that the ball didn't quite bounce their way on the last drive or the second to last drive of the game, where they could have potentially won that one and had a winning record. And that would have been great. But what I've said in recruiting is, you have to be careful with recruiting, because they were better than last out of all the Power 5 last year because they only had like 12 scholarships, but they need to start doing much better in recruiting, and they need a proven closer. And you look at last year, and the sign I pointed to say they're making progress was they landed Demir Collins and Easton Mascarenhas. Those are two of the top 500 high school recruits in the nation. First time they'd landed any in 3 years. That can't happen. But who was the primary recruiter for both Easton Mascarenhas and Demir Collins? Michael Petrie. He's gone. He went to the Chicago Bears. And you filled him in with a guy who's never recruited a top 700 high school kid in his entire career. So he's not a recruiter. At least to
date.
Or he
doesn't have the experience.
He's an unproven recruiter at best, but does not carry the reputation as a recruiter. Talk to people nationally at 24/7. They said he's not going to move the needle as a recruiter. He's not that guy. He could be a great coach. He's not that guy. So you have a staff full of not really that guys right now in terms of elite recruiters. They have solid recruiters. They don't have anybody elite. A closer potentially makes the difference between I'm on the fence about an Oregon State or a Boise State, and it tips the scales.
That's what I was going to ask, is that you just can't keep losing guys that you've been recruiting for a long time. Was Boise State in from the beginning, or did they enter a little bit later? Because it's one of those things where you try to build this relationship and then it's like, oh, well, I'm going to go to the other school because you were kind of like my fallback option if no other schools offered me. And, oh, look, Boise State, shiny light blue field. Hey, let's go there.
Or is that how Boise State offered 2 weeks ago.
Okay. So, yeah, that's
Oregon
problem.
State's been recruiting him for
a year.
Several months.
So, I mean, that's kind of the problem is, I guess for a kid like that, he views Oregon State as his safety school almost. Like when you go to college and you apply to multiple schools, you pick the safety school because you think you'll get in, and just in case you don't get into the other schools. For me, the safety school was Rutgers, right? And I applied to a couple others, and There you go. If I didn't get into those, I would be going to Rutgers. Maybe that's how he viewed Oregon State. Like, oh, well, it's a good safety school, but let's go give it the old college try and see what happens.
Yeah. I listen, there's tons of time. Caden Hauser's not an All-American. He's not a superstar, five-star prospect. So this isn't like, oh my gosh, there's no ability to make this up.
Right, but Oregon State's not going to get that kid anyway.
But what I am saying is if you recruit a kid for several months and Boise State offers, you shouldn't lose that battle 2 weeks later consistently. And if you are, and they aren't right now, but if you start to lose that battle consistently, you're not going to win in the Pac-12. I mean, you can have the cute season where you're almost 500 or the season where you are 500, and that's wonderful. But you can't be afraid of the Mountain West coming in over the top of you and taking your kids. That can't happen. Now, this isn't disaster, and I don't mean to say it is. And I hope that's coming across the right way because I'm not killing Oregon State for this. What I'm saying is if you're recruiting a guy and the kid openly says, I really like Oregon State, I'm probably going to visit, they're a school I'm into, and that's what his camp is saying, the people at his high school, he likes Oregon State a lot. And within 2 weeks, Boise State offers and he commits and that's the end of his recruitment. That's not typically a good sign. And when you just had a year where you finished outside the top 100 in recruiting and then lost the only guy, the only recruiter on your staff who brought in top 500 talent, this is not how you want to start. They have currently no commitments in the class of 2022. And I think, and I don't know, but based on what I know, Caden Hauser was either number one on their board for recruiting a quarterback or among their top guys. They would have liked to have gotten him. And within 2 weeks, Boise State offered and he picked the Broncos. That hurts. There's time, but it stings.
Yep.
Oregon basketball. Behind the scenes, there's some real stuff going on. Some of it good. Most of it actually not good when it comes to recruiting. We will talk about what that is next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 10 in the Fan.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan, Odyssey app, and 1080thefan.com.
We got a lot going on in the world. Oregon trying to build a pipeline to Texas for football recruiting. Oregon State just lost arguably the number one quarterback on their board, certainly a guy that they had clearly prioritized, to Boise State. Boise State just offered 2 weeks ago. Oregon State's been recruiting him for months. Picks up an offer from Boise State, and he out. Caden Hauser, during the show, not on the show, but during the show, commits to Boise State. That's a big one. That's going to sting in Corvallis. They're going to feel that one a little bit. And then, quietly, the Oregon men's basketball program has some news. And Dana Altman's an ace roster builder. He aligns Rubik's Cubes. Who is that? Is it John Rothstein? That's his big thing. Is that who that is that always says Dana Altman, he aligns Rubik's Cubes? Because he always finds the right fit in February and March.
John Rothstein is insufferable. That's the word. To follow on Twitter. He's a good follow for like college basketball news, but he sure loves himself some John Rothstein. I don't know if that's what he says about Dana Altman, but I kind of hate that dude. Sorry. Tangent.
Wow. How do you really feel about him?
I just told you.
You don't like him.
He schedules tweets during March and says March is April is when we sleep, but he's sleeping because he scheduled the tweet. Shut up.
John Rothstein. His name is Dana Altman, and he aligns Rubik's Cubes. It's John Rothstein.
Okay.
And I noticed that too, for what it's worth. Yes. But I think it's a good line, which is why he turned it into a shirt, by the way, which is
of course he did.
Very on brand.
Yes. He's Darren Revelle of college basketball.
Oh, God. Darren Revelle is awful.
In my opinion.
He's knowledgeable, but he's insufferable.
Exactly.
Okay. Same page.
Yes. Because John Rothstein knows his college basketball. It's all he cares about, but he's annoying. It's one of those Twitter follows where you follow him and then you're like, you know what? I'm going to unfollow him. And then you see a quote tweet and you're like, okay, I'll follow him back. It's one of those back and forth.
There are several, I'm going to say four or five local journalists who I have that relationship with.
Yeah.
I'm interested. You know what? I don't want to hear you for like 2 weeks.
I understand. I'm the same way.
No names. One of them's you. You're a jerk.
Okay.
Insufferable.
Understood.
Will Dorkins. What? No, just kidding. The Oregon Ducks men's basketball program quietly going through, it's not huge turmoil. Listen, this is a program that's been incredible the last few years. Four straight Sweet 16s. Peyton Pritchard's doing his thing in the NBA. They've recruited a number of five-star prospects. They just landed Nathan Biddle, the highest-rated in-state recruit in program history, at least in modern recruiting rankings. A lot of things are going right for Dana Altman's program. They don't need a rebuild. They don't need a facelift. They're in good shape. They've got a great recruiting class that during the early signing period, ESPN at one point, like 2 days before signing day, had as the number one recruiting class in America. They're doing a good job, but there's going to be a new face, at least one of the new faces for them on the recruiting trail, because Tony Stubblefield has accepted the job to DePaul. And I don't know if people understand how significant that is. That man can recruit and he's off to DePaul and that is done. Here's a list of Tony Stubblefield's major recruits in just the last few years, where he is the point man accredited, according to 24/7 Sports, as the main figure in their recruitment. Bol Bol, Lou King, Jalen Terry, Kenny Wooten, Chris Duarte, Elgin Cook.
That's some good players right there.
Those are good basketball players. More to the point, today, Chandler Lawson entered the transfer portal. His younger brother, Jonathan Lawson, signed with Oregon as part of this class that was number one in the nation. Jonathan Lawson's roughly the number, he's a top 60 recruit nationally. He's 6'7", great, great, great passer, elite passer at 6'7". Not a great shooter, but a great athlete, very, very smart, comes from the Lawson family. All four Lawson brothers play college, major college ball. Two of them, I think, were at Kansas, and then obviously the younger two, Chandler and Jonathan, were set to go to Oregon. Chandler Lawson enters the portal. That leads questions to Jonathan Lawson. Where is he going to end up? Will he still go to Oregon? Is he going to go somewhere else? His primary recruiter last year, according to his commitment story, Tony Stubblefield.
Yeah. It's a weird job to take, too, DePaul. DePaul kind of sucks. And as always,
unless you get
sucked.
Two brothers who are really, really talented.
I suppose that's true. I guess it could be kind of a sleeping giant thing because they're in Chicago. So you are in a major city that people would probably want to live in. And I think DePaul is still in the Big East. So you're in a fairly good basketball conference. So you could get yourself some good wins with some good players. But, man, I remember DePaul just being bad when they were in the Big East with Syracuse. And I'm not sure they've done much better since then.
And I want to be clear here. I have not spoken to Jonathan Lawson. Also, they have a family member who's heavily involved in their recruitment who I've talked to for the past few years, because it started with Chandler, and I have a fairly decent relationship with him. We check in every once in a while and talk a little basketball. I cannot get a hold of anybody from the family, which is rare. That has not been common. In fact,
so that's not a good sign, you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, Jonathan was supposed to be on the show last week because they won a state title in basketball over the weekend. It was the 10th state title for the Lawson brothers. He also set a Tennessee record winning three state titles with three different programs. He's the only Tennessee basketball player to ever accomplish that. So he was going to be on the show, and then suddenly he wasn't. And then I have heard nothing from anyone from the Lawson family, which is not, they're not being rude. I'm not upset about it. They're going to do what's best for
them.
They're
not required to answer.
Yeah. They don't have to talk to me. I'm not blasting them. It's just not a good sign is all I'm saying. It doesn't surprise me that Lawson entered the transfer portal today. Because the interaction has changed. It doesn't mean it's bad. It's just the interaction's changed. Mm-hmm. Seems like something's up. Sure enough, Chandler's in the portal. Don't know about Jonathan, but I can't imagine Chandler's leaving because he's not maybe thrilled with playing time because whatever reason he's homesick, but then Jonathan's still going to go there, but it could still happen. We will see. That's a bigger deal than I think people realize. I don't know if people, when you saw that Stubblefield was leaving, did you think, oh man, this is a major recruiter for Oregon. It'll be interesting to see what they do going forward.
No.
Or were you just like, okay, they lost an assistant. Altman's still there. Who cares? Let's keep it rolling.
That's kind of what I thought. I just went, Oregon assistant goes to get DePaul job. Okay, cool. He wanted to be a head coach somewhere, and that's where we offered him. And Chicago's a nice city. Okay. Next man up, right? That's kind of how I viewed it.
And they still have Mike Menega. I think Menega does a phenomenal job. He's got connections in Canada, and he's recruited some big names. I think, Frank Kepnang was a guy I think he's credited for, and he's obviously looking like he could be very special. He already played in March. I know he had some hiccups, but he was supposed to be a senior in high school playing in March Madness. So they still have guys that can recruit, and Altman can still recruit, and they've got Nathan Biddle, and they've got Frank Kepnang, and Jalen Terry, when he played in flashes in the regular season, he looked the part, and they do a phenomenal job with transfers. I'm not worried about the Oregon men's basketball program. They just had a phenomenal run. I imagine they'll be in contention for the Pac-12 title again next year like they are every year. But it's going to be a different look. And one of their primary recruiters has moved on. It's a new generation on the recruiting trail. But it matters. But I also want to pause and pump the brakes a little bit when we act like, oh, it's doom and gloom. It's not. They're still bringing in Nathan Biddle, the number 9 recruit in the nation.
It's just something to keep an eye on.
It's something to watch. It's definitely something to watch. And it's more of an issue, or it's more of a factor. It's more interesting, frankly, than I think most people give it credit for at first glance. We got to go over the class of 2023 Oregon rankings. 24/7 released the rankings of the top football players in the state of Oregon for the class of 2023. Three names make an early splash. We mentioned them before because we're ahead of the curve like that, especially with in-state guys. We better have the in-state guys right. So we will break that down for you next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan, Odyssey app, and 1080thefan.com.
The initial rankings for the class of 2023 are out on 24/7 Sports. Only one Oregon prospect's made it so far, but three guys were ranked. And three of them ranked fairly high. The number one player on the board I got to see last week, Central Catholic against Grant, and there is no doubt. I tweeted about it like a month ago that he would be in the discussion for the top prospect in Oregon. There is no doubt that Central Catholic tight end Riley Williams is really ridiculously good. This kid's like 6'6", 230 pounds, and he's a sophomore. Soft hands, runs beautiful routes. Number 140 player in the nation, according to 24/7 Sports at tight end. Number 7 tight end in the entire country. That may not seem super high. This is a special, special, special tight end group, especially on the West Coast. There are years where if you're the number 7 tight end in the nation, you're like 290th in the country as an overall prospect. This is one of the best collections of tight ends in a single year early that we've ever seen. Riley Williams is special. Riley Williams has two uncles who played for Oregon. His brother, Corbin Williams, who's a really likable kid. I really liked Corbin a lot. He was a wide receiver at Central Catholic. He's a walk-on at Oregon. Couldn't be a nicer kid. Great family. Riley Williams is ridiculous. I went into that Grant Central Catholic game going, okay, this kid's hyped. A lot of people talk about him. His film looks pretty good. I want to see him in person. And there's times with 15 and 16-year-olds where you watch him and you go, okay, he's pretty close to the hype. People are embellishing a little bit. And there are times you go, eh, kid's not very good, early hype. Riley Williams is one of the only prospects in the last 5-10 years I've seen who hype does not match how good he is because he's better than the hype already. Riley Williams, I think personally, especially given Central Catholic's connections to the All-American Bowl, is going to end up being an Adidas All-American if he puts in the work. I just talked to him during the break. He was going to try to do the show. He got out of practice. He's riding in the car. It's a little noisy in the car. I think he said he was going to tune in. Well, he said he was going to tune in. Maybe he's really listening. I don't know. But Riley Williams is really, really special. Already has offers from Arizona State, Oregon, Oregon State. Today picked up an offer from Washington. And this is a kid I'm going to be talking about for the next few years. And it's very, very rare that somebody tells me this kid's one of the top 10 players in the nation at his position when he's a sophomore and he's from Oregon. And I watch him and believe it. And then even call that person back and go, you're wrong. He's even better than that. Riley Williams has a chance to be potentially, if he puts in the work, if he continues to develop, potentially be an NFL prospect. That's how good Riley Williams is. He's unreal.
What class is he?
2023.
Wow.
6'6", 6'7", 230 pounds. And fluid, man. Like that big and that young, and you think, okay, he's tripping over his own feet and stuff. He can catch the ball and outrun smaller guys. He is good. Soft hands, good route runner, good blocker, physical. Drop back into coverage and swatted down a ball against Grant, who's a better-than-you-think football team coming out of the PIL. He was special. I mean, I went up to him after the game and was like, dude, you are different. And he was hands down, unquestionably, the best prospect on the field. And he shares that field with Amarion Winston, who's a four-star prospect committed to Oregon. In terms of who's the better prospect, who has the higher ceiling, it's Riley Williams, and it's not close.
Well, that kind of player is becoming more and more prevalent in the sport, too. The really tall, big, but great athlete tight end. I mean, you're seeing it in the NFL. You're seeing some of the most important players in the league are these big tight ends. You're seeing it in the draft this year with, what's his face, Kyle Pitts?
Yeah, Kyle Pitts is out of Florida. Nasty.
And that dude
and
is
been that dude since high school.
That dude is insane.
Yeah.
And that's now becoming such an important position on the field because of the mismatches.
And Riley,
and you saw it with Gronk, and you see it now with Kelce and Kittle and all the guys that are coming in that are just freak athletes at the tight end position. You're just seeing it become such an important part. So it's almost like the perfect time to be a great big athletic tight end in recruiting, because it's like, ooh, everyone's salivating over you.
And I think in terms of the type of tight end he is, Kyle Pitts can almost play a receiver. He's like Calvin Johnson or Mike Evans size. And I think Riley Williams, and I'm not saying he is this guy, just in terms of what kind of tight end he is. He's more the Travis Kelce, but more physical type. He's that big guy that runs good routes, but has soft hands and can make the catch. But he doesn't line up outside and run by corners, right? That's what he'll probably, that's the kind of tight end he'll develop into. But he will be a plus blocker, I think, in time too. He's a really good football player. DeMarcus Houston came in at number two on their list. If you read my tweet a month ago, I said Riley Williams and DeMarcus Houston are going to battle for the top spot in the state of Oregon. There's a reason. DeMarcus Houston is already 6'2", 185 pounds. He plays for FSP, the 7-on-7 program up in Seattle. We've had their players on. JT Tuimoloau plays for them. We've had their coaches on. I love those guys. And he competes, man. And they think he's good. I mean, they think he's got a chance to be really special. He's a top 30 corner in the nation. And then at number three, we had him on the show last week, 2 weeks ago, Sam Levitt, the Westview quarterback. He's rated as one of the top 10 dual threat quarterbacks in the country right now. Really exciting to see his progression. Those are the top 2023 guys. In general, Oregon will end up with more than one guy in the top 24/7. And in the next month or two, they will add three or four more guys as three-star prospects. Had a chance to talk 24/7 about it. They like three or four more guys. They're guys we've already mentioned. They will come up. You will see the names and go, yep, those are guys we've talked about before. There's a number of good players in the class of 2023 coming up. I'm really excited about. But right now, the early leaders in the clubhouse, Riley Williams and DeMarcus Houston, those guys are good. And I mean, there are years where I'm kind of disappointed in 1, 2, 3, and I'm like, man, do I got to cover those guys? They're kind of full of themselves. They're 15 or 16. I don't know if they'll put in the work. I have no concerns about the top of the board in Oregon for 2023. 2024 looks like it's good. And in the past, and we get it like 4 or 5 years early, I've said this before, you can always kind of tell when a group has a special group, because the high school coaches will be like, our eighth graders are unreal. The 2025s in Oregon are supposed to be fantastic. And they're already talking about them as an all-time group. In fact, I talked to somebody connected to rankings who's already talking about the 2025s in Oregon being one of the deepest classes ever. It's special, man. And it's really fun to see guys this young be this good and this dedicated. Riley Williams is dedicated. DeMarcus Houston goes up to Seattle to practice, to get better, to get reps against four-star guys. Sam Levitt moved to Utah to make sure he'd have a sophomore season. These kids are workers. And that is what's so important, is you don't just see a ceiling, you see that they want to reach that ceiling. Chili Stevens doing like, what was it, 600 pounds leg lifts or squats or something the other day, put that video on Twitter. He's a running back. He's a sophomore. I mean, we're just seeing these guys put in the work. It's so nice to see. It's so encouraging to see, because it's not talking about guys that you think, great ceiling, way too early to talk about him. Probably not going to figure it out. These are kids who have it figured out between the ears and are good football players. It's great to see. New face of Oregon recruiting on the basketball front. Menega does a great job. Dana Altman does a great job. But Tony Stubblefield is moving on to DePaul. It's something to watch. Oregon State had a number one quarterback target, potentially number one target quarterback target. Caton Hauser picked up an offer from Boise State 2 weeks ago. Today, commits to Boise State. That one stings. And Riley Williams and DeMarcus Houston are going to be household names in the state of Oregon sooner rather than later.
And Oregon's going after Texas.
And Oregon is recruiting the state of Texas. Two commitments in the past couple months, Landon Hullaby, the four-star safety, and yesterday, Steven Johnson, the three-star slot receiver, 6 foot, 180 pounds, 21 second, 200 meter speedster. We'll see how that pans out. Going after bigger fish in Texas. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Thank you, as always, for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Appreciate you.